Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Previously on Bridegroom Bodyguard.
I'm sorry. I don't know who you are.
I hoped you would.
Why?
Because it would have made this easier if you were expecting me.
Make what easier?
This is your son.
You took one heck of a hit on the head.
Not months ago.
Who is she?
I have no idea.
It's just you and me, Park.
I have no idea.
So she was just a one-night stand.
She's not a one-night stand. I would have remembered.
I can't believe you're a father.
You know a lot more than I do.
I don't know why or who.
I'm going to see Judge Foster. She's part of this whole mess.
Judge Foster fired us over a year and a half ago. What would she have to do with anything going on with you and Sharon?
I work for her.
You can't just go traipsing off alone when you've got a bounty on your head.
I'll be fine. Nobody's touched me yet.
He won't be alone. I'm going with him.
Judge Foster?
She was already dead. On the floor behind her desk, Brenda's body sprawled across the toppled-over leather chair. Her neck was bent at an odd angle, not because of how she was lying, but because her neck had been broken. Blood trailing from her mouth had dried into a thick black pool beneath her head. Her face was ghostly white. She must have been dead for a while. It could have been days or weeks. Parker gently pulled her away from the dead body and pulled her into him, protecting her from the sight of the body. Sharon trembled and shivered in his arms, dampening his shirt with her tears. She was in shock.
I'm sorry. So sorry.
I'm the one who should be sorry. And I am. I shouldn't have brought you here. You shouldn't have had to see your boss like this.
But she was the mother of your son, Ethan.
Are you all right? I need to make some calls.
She nodded and pulled completely away from him. Replacing his arms with hers, she wrapped them around herself, as if trying to hold herself together. She felt more alone than ever before, but she needed the distance because she clearly needed him now more than ever.
You are calling the police, right?
Brenda told you to trust nobody but me.
But you can't just leave her here like this.
He had called a woman, a beautiful young woman with auburn hair and brown eyes. She showed up before the police arrived, but he didn't let her look at the body. He didn't even let her pass the security system control panel at the door to the den. Goosebumps rose on Sharon's skin beneath the thin material of her jacket. What if Brenda had been wrong about him? What if she shouldn't have trusted Parker Payne?
Are you all right?
Sharon must have looked as pale and sick as she felt. Seeing Brenda like that, it had brought back so many horrific memories that she had lost it. And she was barely hanging on to her composure now. She could only nod. The woman turned toward Parker.
Did you call an ambulance?
Parker glanced up from where he was studying the body, that horribly broken and lifeless body, behind the desk.
She's beyond medical help for a while now.
I'm not talking about the judge.
I'm okay. I don't need an ambulance.
She's in shock.
Who were they to each other? Obviously, the brunette worked in the security business, too. Parker moved from behind the desk to join the woman at the door. But she didn't look at him. She was focused on the laptop instead. How could she ignore Parker Payne? How could any woman? He turned toward Sharon and studied her face.
Are you really all right?
She nodded again. Physically, she was fine. Emotionally, she was a mess. But it wasn't just over finding another dead body. It was over the suspicion that had begun to niggle at her. Why had Parker called this woman to mess with the security system? To cover his tracks? And Sharon had left Ethan with his family. If Parker couldn't be trusted, could she trust any of the Paynes?
I should get back to Ethan. He'll be afraid if he wakes up and I'm not there.
Ethan? Is that your baby's name?
Ethan is my son. You could have met him at the hospital if you'd been there.
I was there.
You were? Then why didn't you come to see me?
She shrugged, but her thin shoulders were tense.
What do you want to know from the security system?
I want to know who was here last.
Sharon Wells.
Before tonight. Who was the last one here?
Sharon Wells. 2 weeks ago.
You were the last one here?
2 weeks ago was when I packed up some of Ethan's stuff and took the cash Brenda gave me to use the past 2 weeks. But I couldn't have been the last one to see her.
Alive?
Brenda wasn't alone when I was here last. Her bodyguard was with her.
Her bodyguard was with the two of you when the judge told you to hide for 2 weeks and then contact me if you hadn't heard from me.
She nodded.
Who is her bodyguard?
Obviously not someone very good.
I only know his first name. Chuck.
You can come on in. We're with Payne Protection. I'm the one who placed the 911 call.
Hey, Park. Are you still protecting the judge?
If I had been, you wouldn't have been called here. We found the judge dead.
We?
Me and Sharon Wells.
I'm Sharon Wells, and I worked for Judge Foster.
They began to look at her as Parker had, as if she was a suspect. But she couldn't have hurt her. She couldn't hurt anyone. Would the police be arresting her before they left the judge's house?
Parker could not help Sharon now. The police were questioning her the same way that he had, wondering why she was the last person to have seen her employer alive. Only she hadn't been the last person, and he would prove that for her. But first, he had to settle something else. So he hurried across the driveway to chase down the person who had tried sneaking away from the crime scene.
Why didn't you come see me at the hospital? Nix, what's wrong?
Nothing.
He grabbed her and folded her into a hug. His little sister never cried. She was too tough for that. Or at least too determined to prove to her brothers that she was every bit as tough as they were.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I didn't mean to make you feel bad.
It was my fault that you nearly got blown up.
You didn't put the bomb in my SUV. I'm not hurt.
He ignored the pounding in his head. It had gone down to a dull thud anyway.
You can't even remember the mother of your child.
Oh. I remember her.
He glanced to where the morgue technicians loaded Brenda Foster's body into the back of the coroner's van. Poor Ethan. He was so young that he wouldn't even remember his mother.
That's good. I'm glad your memory is back.
I'm glad you're here.
Did you tell her that I'm your sister?
Parker couldn't remember if he had introduced Sharon. He'd been preoccupied with finding the judge's body and with trying to find out who had killed her and how. If her bodyguard had been there, why hadn't he protected Brenda? Parker wouldn't have failed a client like that. He would have died trying to keep her safe. If he hadn't let Brenda fire him just so they could sleep together, she would still be alive.
When they take her to the police department to give her statement, you need to go with her and make sure she stays safe.
He didn't want his sister in danger either. Parker was going to heed the judge's warning to trust no one but him and his family, of course.
Where are you going?
You tell me. Find out who this Chuck is, who was supposed to be protecting the judge.
There was no Chuck with fingerprint access to the judge's home. Could she have been lying?
No. Brenda must not have trusted the guy enough to give him access.
Then why would she have had him protecting her?
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
As Parker had suspected, Logan knew who the Chuck was that worked bodyguard detail. Charles Chuck Horowitz. His loyalty went to the person who paid him the most. An outside stairwell led to Chuck Horowitz's second-story combination apartment office.
Brenda really dropped her standards when she hired this yahoo.
Glad that he had changed into dark clothes, Parker kept to the shadows as he climbed the stairs. He didn't need to make himself a target. A twinge of regret and loss struck Parker's heart. One day Ethan might learn, either through the internet or gossip, how brutally his mother had died. He reached the narrow landing at the top of the stairs. Using the flashlight on the barrel of his gun, Parker swung it around the tiny apartment. The place was trashed, really trashed. The couch was overturned and gutted, stuffing strewn across the dirty carpet. Holes had been smashed through the drywall, and there'd been one hell of a struggle within those walls. The beam of his flashlight glanced across a pair of glazed-over eyes. Parker trained the light on the man tied to the chair behind his desk. From the bloating and the stench, it was obvious this corpse had been here a while. Chuck Horowitz had been beaten to death. But Parker noticed something else. The scratches on his hands and arms and the side of his face. The mercenary bodyguard hadn't gotten those scratches from whoever had killed him. He had gotten those from the woman he had killed. What had his killer wanted? Chuck had already killed the judge. Hadn't that been enough?
I have answered all of your questions. You have no reason to hold me here.
When the officer had questioned her at the hospital, he had used an office with a window. It hadn't been so confining and suffocating as the small, windowless interrogation room.
You were the last one to see the Honorable Brenda Foster alive.
Her head pounded, too, with stress and exhaustion. Maybe that was part of why she kept shaking.
Her bodyguard was the last person to see her alive.
A man whose last name you don't even know. That's quite convenient.
He was older than her, but not by much, so he had apparently made detective young enough that it had gone to his head.
It's quite convenient that you're forgetting I have rights, Detective Sharp. Rights that you haven't read me because you have no evidence to put me under arrest.
Now, I can tell that you've been working for a judge for a while. So then you should know that I can hold you as a material witness.
I didn't witness anything, and I haven't just worked for a judge.
Oh, you and Judge Foster were more than employee and employer?
I haven't just worked for a judge. I am also Judge Wells's granddaughter.
It wasn't something she had ever freely or happily admitted. But it was an irrefutable fact. Like Judge Foster, police officers had respected Judge Wells for his tough sentences.
I'm sorry. That must have been tough tonight, seeing the judge's corpse. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't have killed her.
I couldn't have. Physically, I couldn't have, and you know that.
Maybe you used a weapon. Did you really have nothing with you when the officers brought you in?
I have no idea what kind of weapon could have done that to Brenda.
If that were true, why did you hide your things from the officers at the scene?
You're wasting your time with me when you should be finding Judge Foster's bodyguard. He was the last one to see her alive because he was with her when I left her house. You need to find that man right now.
It's too late.
What's too late?
He's dead. What do you know about Parker Payne, Miss Wells?
That the judge trusted him.
Do you?
If the bodyguard was killed weeks ago, then Parker didn't have anything to do with it.
Do you know what he was doing weeks ago?
Parker has been in danger.
Or maybe he is the danger, because he's a killer.
Parker Payne is no criminal.
I would have agreed with you, but he has recently started associating with some known criminals.
I wouldn't know.
The Kosminskis? They were at the hospital earlier when the bomb went off in the parking lot. They were with their new brother-in-law, Logan Payne.
I don't know the Kosminskis. I have nothing to do with any of this. Not only am I physically incapable of doing what was done to the judge, but I have no motive to hurt her. Now that she's dead, I have no job.
You have the biggest motive, Miss Wells. When the judge's murder was reported on television, her lawyer contacted us about her child. He thought the child would be with you.
He's with friends.
The judge's will made you the guardian of her son and the trustee of the estate he'll inherit from her. A sizable estate from which you'll draw a sizable salary for his care. That gives you a very big motive for her murder.
A wave flushed over Sharon. She could hardly pay attention to Sharp's accusations. The news of Ethan's guardianship had overcome her. Such a shining star amidst all this bleakness.
I don't need money, and if you'd done your job, you'd know that. Also, I would never kill anyone.
Not even for that little boy. The judge must have really trusted you with him to appoint you as his guardian in her will.
I never really knew what Judge Foster was thinking or what she was involved in. You will need to investigate her life to find out who killed her, not mine. So unless you're going to press charges, I'm leaving, Detective.
She stood up and walked to the door. She tried to turn the knob, but it was locked in place. He had locked her inside the interrogation room, the small, windowless room. All those memories that had already rushed over her once that evening rushed back again, overwhelming her. Her legs weakened.
Parker's heart beat a frantic pace as he watched the paramedics wheel Sharon's unconscious body into the hospital, where he'd been pacing the emergency room while he waited for her arrival.
You were supposed to protect her.
We couldn't go into the interrogation room with her.
Who the hell was interrogating her?
Sharp.
I'll kill him.
Don't go making any threats.
But what the hell did he do to her?
She was already in shock from the crime scene. She should have gone from the judge's house to the hospital, not the police station.
Detective Sharp stepped through the doors behind Nikki and Cooper, but before Parker could reach for his scrawny little neck, Logan pulled him back.
No threats. Calm down, or he will have the authority to arrest you this time.
Let him. What the hell did you do to her?
What did I do? It's what you did. Bringing Sharon Wells to a murder scene.
I didn't know it was a murder scene. Any more than I knew that there was a murder scene at Chuck Horowitz's house.
That's what all criminals say.
You're way out of line here, Sharp.
What did you mean about Sharon? What did you know about her?
You don't know who she is.
Just tell me what you know about Sharon.
She's the late Judge Wells' granddaughter.
I don't remember much about him.
Guess you only pay attention to the female judges. Your sister knows. She's younger than you are.
What do you know, Nix?
It was a tragic story.
Oh, I remember.
Where was I?
We were kids when it happened.
Who died?
Sharon's mother. She was really young. She was just a teenager when she had Sharon. The story goes that the judge and his wife didn't approve, so she ran away from home. She was working nights at a gas station or a convenience store when she was murdered.
That's awful.
Like Ethan, Sharon had also lost her mother when she was young. She would be able to identify with the little boy even more than she already seemed to.
What was worse is that the girl couldn't afford a babysitter, so she brought Sharon to work with her. She was there when her mother was murdered.
How old was she?
I think 3 or 4. When customers came in, her mother would have her crawl into a cupboard behind the counter. The killer didn't know she was there, or she probably would have been killed too.
Do you think she saw what happened?
She picked the killer out of a lineup.
At 3 or 4 years old? Did she testify?
It didn't go to trial. The killer didn't know there was a witness, so he confessed.
You know all this about her, and you still interrogated her in some little room. You sadistic blowhard. She has no motive either. The judge made her trustee of the estate with a generous income.
She's Judge Wells' granddaughter. I hardly think she needs money.
But she doesn't just get money out of the deal. She gets the kid, too.
What?
Birth certificate states father unknown. She probably used a sperm donor.
Now Parker's face was the one that flushed with embarrassment. He'd been a sperm donor, but an unwitting one.
But if someone can prove he's the boy's father as the sole parent, he would become the boy's guardian.
It would probably go to court. He'd have to fight for custody. I doubt he would have killed the judge, because it probably just complicates his life.
So Parker was off the hook for murder and fatherhood, but he wanted his son. He wanted to fight, but could Sharon even handle a fight?
If someone can prove he's the boy's father, the words echoed in her ears as she stared down at the sleeping baby. Why had they been waiting for her? She was scarcely more than a stranger to them. But when they had turned toward her, she'd seen it on all of their faces, that overly solicitous concern that told her they knew. They knew what had happened to her mother. She focused on Ethan. Now at the safe house, a spark of joy lit. Was she really his new mother?
Didn't he even wake up?
Oh, he woke up, and he cried most of the time you were gone. He only fell back to sleep a short while ago. While he's sleeping, you should get some rest. You must be exhausted.
I just want to watch him sleep.
It's like he knows you're here. He recognizes his mother's presence.
No, I'm not.
You love him like he's yours. And he loves and relies on you like you're his mother.
I do love him very much.
Are you going to fight me?
She was so tired that she hadn't even heard him climb the stairs to the top floor, master bedroom, where he'd set up that portable crib, what seemed like so long ago.
Fight you?
Judge Foster gave me guardianship of Ethan in her will.
Then why would she fight you?
Because there is no way that I'm going to give up my son.
So because I'm not his blood relative, you would cut me out of his life?
That was what her grandparents had expected her mother to do, to give up her baby to strangers. To just give her up and walk away and forget all about her. But maybe if her mother had, she would still be alive, since she would have been in college and not working at a convenience store in a bad area of the city.
Nobody's asking you to do that.
A judge might.
A judge might not care that he has your DNA. You didn't even know about him until I brought him to you.
You're probably regretting that now.
According to Brenda, you never wanted to be a father.
That's why she tricked me.
You have said before, a lot, that you never wanted to be a father.
Mom, whose side are you on?
I'm on my grandson's side. I don't want him to have to give up either one of you, and if you take each other to court, you might both lose him. Doesn't a judge still have to approve this guardianship? And just because you're his father doesn't mean you'll automatically get him. You've never had any interest in children or in being a father.
That was before I knew that I am a father.
Sharon reached out and grasped Parker's arm, his muscles tensed beneath her touch. She was tense, too. She looked at him. His gaze met hers with a warmth she'd never known. They were in this together.
We can't lose him to the system.
So you must have a plan for your grandson, since you have a plan for everyone. What do you propose we do?
Propose? Marry her.
Wait, what?
By the time he had gotten rid of everyone else, Sharon had fallen asleep in the middle of the king-sized bed in the master suite, and he found himself standing over her, watching her sleep. She was exhausted. He wanted to gather her into his arms and hold her close to protect her. Maybe his mother was right. Maybe he should marry her. Not just so they would have a better chance at keeping Ethan, but also so Parker could protect her. He'd be lying if he said he didn't admire her. After all she has been through, she was still fighting for Ethan and for Judge Foster. He began to wonder what she would do for anyone else she loved.
Sharon. Sharon.
Her thick lashes fluttered as if she struggled to wake, or maybe it was the dream, the nightmare, that she struggled to escape. Finally, her eyes, those enormous light brown eyes, opened, and she stared up at him. But the fear didn't leave her face, and he heard it too, coming from the stairwell. He reached for his gun, but dead bodies meant dead ends. He pressed the gun into her hands.
If it looks like he's getting the best of me, pull the trigger. I took the safety off.
He turned toward the stairwell, vaulted over the railing, and rushed down the steps.
Shh, sweetheart, I'm here. You're safe.
He kicked his feet and flailed his arms, reaching for her. And she wanted to reach for him. But if she put down the gun, if Parker needed her, but she wasn't so sure about his daddy. So she moved back toward the stairwell and peered over the side, over the barrel of the gun she held. The men were a tangle of arms and legs. She couldn't make out who was who, but she did see the glint of metal in the beam of sunshine pouring through the skylights above the stairwell.
Damn, I came here to warn you, and this is how you thank me?
Garrick, I couldn't see it was you. What the hell is going on?
You break my neck on the damn stairs.
Show some sensitivity, man.
Show some appreciation.
But how did you find me?
The blonde from earlier grunted and shoved, trying to lever Parker off him. But Parker wasn't ready yet to let the man up. He wanted to stay between him and Sharon.
I've been tailing you.
You mean stalking?
I am not a stalker.
Then why are you holding a knife?
As the man flashed the blade in question, Sharon steadied the barrel of the gun. She was ready to shoot.
I cannot say exactly what this is, since I'm not allowed to possess any tools for breaking and entering. But hypothetically speaking, this looks more like a lockpick than a knife. Probably couldn't cause a wound much deeper than a paper cut.
I don't understand why you tailed me here and broke in. Logan would have preferred you'd gone through him.
I don't want Logan putting himself and my sister in the line of fire. She was nearly killed because she was with him when he was mistaken for you. My sister's already been through too much.
Sharon has already been through too much, too.
And he glanced up again, but she and the gun barrel were both gone. She must have determined that Garrick was no threat, or she had decided that Ethan needed her more than Parker did, because the baby's cries had subsided.
Don't hurt her.
Do you think I came here to hurt you? I came here to warn you, to help you.
I'm sorry. I just have to be careful.
You have to be more careful now.
Why? What have you learned?
The reward for your murders has been doubled.
What's going on?
You should tell her.
Tell me what?
She stepped closer to the stairs. He noticed the baby in her arms. Ethan clung to her, his little fingers tangled in her hair.
Whoever wants us dead, up the ante.
He wasn't sure she would understand, but she nodded and sucked in an audibly shaky breath. And then, with the boy balanced on one of her lean hips, she pulled the gun out with the hand on her other side. The barrel was pointed straight and steady down the stairwell.
Yeah, so she's going to shoot you to collect.
I have money. I'll pay you to leave us alone.
I've never met two more ungrateful people.
I'm sorry, but you're Kosminski, right? Detective Sharp warned me about you.
Shit, of course he did.
He warned me about Parker, too.
I knew the guy was an idiot, but you have nothing to fear from any one of the Paynes. They're all about law and order. You're safer with this guy than you would be with anybody else, probably even with the police right now.
Thanks for breaking and entering to give us the heads up.
I would have called.
I replaced my cell with this one. It's an untrackable phone. Now you can call next time.
Let's hope there isn't a next time. You don't want the reward getting tripled. Or I might be tempted to collect.
Garrick turned and headed down the stairs to the basement garage as Parker locked up and set the alarm before heading upstairs.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There was probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Sharon arched her neck to where she had left his weapon. He only noticed how delicate her neck looked, how slender she was, vulnerable and beautiful. She hadn't had much sleep, and it showed in the dark circles beneath her enormous eyes.
I'm sorry about that.
Why? Do you think I'm too weak or fragile to know what's going on? That the reward for our murders has been increased?
You handled that pretty well.
Don't patronize me. I could barely hold on to it. But that wasn't because I'm weak or fragile. It's because I don't like guns.
I don't think you're weak or fragile. I know how strong you have to be when you lose a parent.
I'm sorry.
You know about my dad?
Brenda told me that he died when you were a teenager, and another man went to prison for his murder.
Garrick's dad was the man in prison for his murder.
And his sister is married to your brother?
They used to hate each other, or so they claimed. But Stacy always knew it wasn't her dad who had killed ours. She was right. It wound up being another officer, his partner.
Brenda told me not to trust the police.
Her arm tightened around Ethan, and she glanced around the condo, looking for more intruders. He glanced around, too. They really weren't safe anywhere. He moved closer to her and gently touched his son's face. He looked down to Sharon, her concern for Ethan visible. There was no way he could let these two down. She looked back at him, her eyes large, pleading.
What do we do now?
Parker's mind flashed to their kiss, her astounding resilience. Who was Sharon Wells, really? He needed to know.
We get married.
Sharon stared at herself in the oval mirror, unable to believe that was actually her reflection staring back at her. How was that her in the lacy, strapless white dress and veil? She had pulled back the veil so that she could see, so that the image would be clear. Why had she agreed to such a silly plot? Was it really the only way she could be with Ethan? Was she falling for Parker? How could she know if she could trust him? She had so many questions on her wedding day. But at least Ethan was that much closer to being her son, and safe.
I've seen a lot of brides in this room, but I have never seen one look as scared as you do. But then, you're the one marrying Parker.
Sharon turned to see the young auburn-haired woman who had been at Brenda's house, and at the police station, and at the hospital with her. And the woman wasn't alone. She had brought an enormous dog with her, as it sniffed around the bride's room.
I didn't mean to scare you more. With all my brothers married, Mom's going to have no one left to manipulate into marriage but me.
Brothers?
I'm Nikki Payne.
I'm glad to meet you.
He should have introduced us at the judge's house, but I was still a mess from him nearly getting blown up earlier.
And here I thought I was a mess.
You messed with Parker, letting him think you'd had his kid and that he didn't even remember you.
He didn't deserve to be kept in the dark about his son all this time.
And now, he is getting married.
Where's Ethan?
He's with his father. All the guys are getting into their tuxes.
I'm dressed now. I can take him back.
Mrs. Payne stepped forward and fussed with the veil, pulling it back over Sharon's face.
You're so beautiful. We can't have the baby messing with my new daughter's hair and veil.
My new daughter. Sharon was grateful for the concealment of the veil now as it hid the tears that Mrs. Payne's sweet remark had springing to her eyes. She had claimed not just Ethan as family, but Sharon, too. Sharon had never really had a family.
Mrs. Payne, are you sure we should be getting married in your beautiful chapel?
We already had one wedding at the hospital.
I was talking about the danger that Parker and I are in. We've had people try to blow up the places we live or visit. I don't want anyone blowing up your chapel to get to us.
Cujo hasn't found any explosives, and all of Payne's protection agency is here. You've never been safer than you are right now.
But as she walked down the aisle toward her groom standing at the altar, Sharon didn't feel safe. Not when she saw how tenderly he held the tiny boy who, also clad in a black tuxedo, was a perfect miniature of him. She felt a terror that she hadn't felt since she was a kid. And if it wasn't fear for her life, was it fear for her heart?
Parker had been told that Sharon was wearing his mother's dress, the same dress that all the other Payne brides had worn. But his memory must have still been screwed up because he couldn't remember ever seeing anyone else in that concoction of white lace and silk. It looked as if it had been made for her alone, for her long, slender body. But it fitted and highlighted the curves that the ugly tan suit had hid.
She walked alone down the aisle on which so many other brides had clutched the arm of a father or a brother. She had no one but Ethan, who wriggled with excitement in his arms as he caught sight of her. Ethan tugged at Sharon's veil.
And Parker laughed at the little boy's determination to get his hands in her hair. His stomach tightened with a desire more intense than he had ever felt before. He wanted his bride, and in a few minutes, she was going to be his. Parker never imagined himself marrying, let alone starting a family. But here he was, and oddly enough, at that moment, he wanted it. He turned back to the minister and nodded.
We're ready.
And he repeated vows he had sworn he would never utter. Vows all about loving and honoring and cherishing until being parted by death. Her voice trembling, Sharon repeated back those vows to him. Death. Could he protect her from it? Could he protect himself?
And now you may kiss the bride.
He leaned down to the child she held and kissed his tiny head. Then he straightened, looked the boy's new mother in the eyes, and pressed his lips to hers. Her breath caught audibly. But then she was kissing him back, her silky lips sliding over his. Her mouth opened, maybe for air, but he deepened the kiss, consuming her.
Parker kept close to Sharon, not just because he was so drawn to her, but because he had already nearly been shot on these very steps.
We set up a perimeter around the church. Nobody could get near it. You're safe here.
Maybe we should stay.
She started reaching back toward the baby clutched in Mrs. Payne's arms, but Parker clasped her hands in his and led her down the stairs. A car waited for them at the curb. Someone had attached cans to the back bumper, along with a sign that read, "Just Married." Nikki stepped forward and pressed the keys into Parker's hand.
It's safe. Cujo and I checked it out thoroughly.
He pointed toward the cans and the sign.
I see that.
It's okay.
He made extra certain that they weren't followed. He stayed focused on the mirrors, watching for cars, but his bride kept drawing his attention to the passenger seat. She was quiet, probably because she was scared. It was when he turned to assure her that everything was all right that he saw the black SUV. He fought to stay conscious, but Sharon was not. Her eyes were closed and blood streaked down from a cut on her head. Was she unconscious or dead?